welcome to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. John Iderola, Anna Kasparian, as we had yesterday. But we also have Maz Jobani joining us after a long gap, hasn't been on the show in a while. A couple of things have changed in the politics of this country since then. I feel like you're going to have a lot to talk about now.
Since last year, a couple of things have changed.
They have, So in terms of the politics, we're going to try to cover as much of that as we can. But you've also been busy. We're going to give people details on some of your live shows that are going to be happening. I know that you're getting ready to prep to shoot a Netflix special.
Yes.
This is like the year of the Netflix comedy specials.
Well, I think, first of all, Netflix, I think, is buying a lot of comedy specials. Mm-hmm. But also as comedians.
Dave Chappelle and Louis C.K.
Chris Rock. So Netflix is really starting to stockpile comedy specials.
Yeah.
I think the world needs comedy. But also as comedians, it's amazing. It's like you can't stop writing. Because I was saying, like, I'm shooting my special next week in D.C. and I actually stopped trying to write new stuff about Trump because it just keeps coming. So he's been really good for comedy, but really bad for the world.
Really bad for the world. So we'll laugh as the Titanic sinks.
As the Titanic sinks, someone's got to entertain.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only entertain, I think that right now so many people are feeling discouraged. And I think this is a shining moment for a lot of comedians because being able to laugh at all the depressing stuff that's going on is very much needed. So
absolutely. It's been interesting.
It has. And you're also starring on Superior Donuts on CBS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a sitcom on CBS. It's based off of a play written by Tracy Letts. And it stars Judd Hirsch and this young African-American comedian named Jermaine Fowler. They're the two main guys. It's kind of like Cheers in a donut shop. Mm-hmm. And we've got Katie Sagal in there, David Koechner.
Yeah, I saw that. I love Katie Sagal.
Yeah, Anna Baryshnikov. It's a great cast. Yeah. And Jimmy Burrows is directing.
And you play a character that's trying to buy the location, but you also go to the location for to eat and drink there.
Yes, I play an Iraqi immigrant who owns properties in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to buy the donut shop as well.
Okay.
Just like, you know, what immigrants do. We buy properties.
Just buy it out from under us.
That's exactly what my dad did.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's based on his life.
In my mind, as an Iranian American, I'm excited because I think it's a step in the right direction because, you know, I'm not playing a terrorist. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, harming anybody. I'm just trying to buy properties.
Just trying to snatch those properties up.
American dream.
From these hardworking white Americans. Why you gotta do that?
I'm gonna give them a good deal.
Makes great deals. I hear there's an art to deals. Maybe we can find a book for you.
Yes.
So we're gonna have a great first hour, great second hour. You're gonna be joined by Hassan and Grace in the second hour. Over the course of this first hour, we're gonna touch on, we've been meaning to get to this for days now, the three different factions in the White House, their struggle for power. We're going to cover that. We're going to cover the intense protests that have been going on for over a week in Venezuela now. We're also going to talk about the consequences of Donald Trump on popularity of Republican politicians around the country. Some really interesting polls have been coming out over the past couple of days. So we're going to get to all that. But before, we do actually have a little bit of good news. So I want to present that to you now. New Mexico just became the first state in the country to require all local and state police officers to have at all times antidote kits for opioid and heroin overdoses, which seems like a great move, probably an expensive one, but considering the amount of deaths that are happening due to those epidemics, having police actually have it on the scene, not having to make an extra call in or call 911 or anything like that, seems like a great, great move. And I would like to see that spread.
Yeah, I think that it's common sense. And there has been some pushback from lawmakers who feel as though it's a way of encouraging drug use, which I completely disagree with. I think that if there's a way to help save lives, and then hopefully we also move toward rehabilitating people rather than criminalizing people for drug use, we could really help, you know, people's lives progress instead of treating them as if they're throwaways in society.
And I think I'm surprised that this is just happening. This is one of those.
That is the first.
I thought cops carried that. That's one of those things that's interesting.
They do in a lot of areas. It's the first state requiring it across the entire state.
I would think that everybody would require that regardless. It's kind of like when I was like when you expect certain things. Like I was at a restaurant and my friend was choking and I didn't know he was choking until someone looked at me and goes, "Dude, you think he needs the Heimlich?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Are there any doctors here?" And there was no doctors there.
Right.
And I was like, "When you want a doctor, they're not there." And the same thing with a cop. You would think that the cop would have, like, if someone were overdosing, and a cop were there, I'd be like, "Get your Narcan thing." And then you're saying some states, they'd be like, "I don't have one."
I mean, we can call in for one maybe. But yeah, so this is a great development. Looking abroad, the country of Turkey is actually on the cusp in less than a week now of considering a referendum that's going to make huge sweeping changes to their system of government. They're actually going to switch from a parliamentary form of government to a presidential form of government if the referendum passes. It has a million other consequences, but one that I think we can't overlook is that if this were to be put into effect, then Erdogan would be able to remain as head of state until 2029. So I'm sure that that's just a happy coincidence that they're considering right now.
Only good things come out of that. I mean, you know, Gaddafi did it. Mm-hmm. Hosni Mubarak did it.
Keep pushing it back. Just push it back.
Trump wants to do it. You know,
we'll see.
I will venture to say that it will pass.
It's possible.
I mean, that's speculation, obviously, but Erdogan is very clear. At least his actions in the past have made it very clear that he is, you know, very much on the right wing of things and will not let go of power easily. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and sort of ironically, well, perhaps not ironically, the attempted coup last year provides the explanation as to why he needs to make these changes. Mm-hmm. It makes it a little bit easier to hold on to power. Turning back to the US, calculations of Donald Trump's travel expenses so far now say that he will actually pass the 8 years of Obama's expenses for travel by Christmas of this year.
Oh my gosh.
In just 1 year. And he basically is just going back and forth between Mar-a-Lago and DC. So I would say let's save a ton of money, possibly hundreds of millions of dollars. Just stay in Mar-a-Lago if that's where you really want to be.
That is where he really wants to be.
I would say abdicate, then stay there. But fine, just stay there as president.
Or can't we just make him fly Spirit Airlines or something?
Can you imagine?
Right?
Can you imagine? Oh my
yeah, but
God.
Like the nuclear football, you got to pay extra to bring that on the plane.
Right?
Man. Come on, they charge you for everything.
Trying to save money here, Southwest.
And then finally, oh wow, I just realized this is an incredibly serious development. But the suspect in the Stockholm terror attack, it's a 39-year-old Uzbek national, had been taken after the attack on Friday, has pled guilty according to his lawyers. In that attack, he killed 4 people, wounded 15 others. There was no doubt, I believe, that this was the guy, but he has actually pled guilty, and so the legal process can continue from there. So yeah, that was a bad transition between those two stories.
Yeah,
but that's
we were laughing there for a minute, but
yeah,
then,
sorry.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn to something. Maybe we can generate some laughs in this first story. Since this weekend, the White House has wanted you desperately to be convinced that the talks of power struggles in the White House actually aren't happening. That everything is hunky-dory, everybody's working together, and that they're not just working together, but they're capping off an incredibly successful, productive first 100 days in office. So that's what they want you to believe. But brewing in the background, the power struggles apparently have not gone away. So I want to take you back about a week to when Steve Bannon was taken off of one of the subcommittees of the National Security Council. This was considered a big move. It brought a little bit more rationality back to the National Security Council. You had people with actual experience in intelligence and national security making some of those decisions. Now, we don't know for sure who it is that got him taken off, but a lot of people have pointed the finger at Jared Kushner. So you have the Steve Bannon coming from Breitbart, representing sort of the nativist section of the power base in the White House. And then you have Jared Kushner, a guy who is being put in charge of project after project after project, even though he's a 36-year-old guy who's only worked in real estate. But he does seem to be a little bit more rational, perhaps a stabilizing force on Donald Trump. Now, previously, Jared Kushner and Steve Bannon had spoken favorably of each other. It seemed like for some reason they'd been able to work together. But now that Steve Bannon's being pushed out of the NSC, his independent organization that had been generating suggestions for policy was apparently disbanded very quietly. It might be that Jared Kushner's star is rising in Donald Trump's eyes, and that is bad for Steve Bannon and for a lot of Trump supporters who don't like Jared Kushner. They want the white supremacist part of the White House to reign supreme. And so back after he was taken off the NSC, you then saw suspiciously Breitbart, which Steve Bannon used to head and of course very influential at, published 4 articles about Jared Kushner that were all negative, all on the same day, highlighting his meetings with the Russian ambassador, which we know is a hot button topic right now, questioning the ethics of his business dealings, including his dealings with Chinese businesses. criticizing his thin resume and diplomacy and speculating about whether he is the source that's leaking negative stories about Bannon as they leak information about Jared Kushner. And I just want to show you one picture of one of these articles. They put out like a BuzzFeed style list of five delicate problems that Jared Kushner is going to, and then of course the picture of him laughing as he flies around in a helicopter. So now that has stopped, and we've heard that Donald Trump said you guys have to get along, you have to talk it out. Then word came out that Breitbart writers had been told to stop writing the negative stories about Jared Kushner. But we also know, and I'm going to get to the video a little bit later on, that Steve Bannon was not just like peeved about being taken off the NSC. He's actually like in a rage. And so what do you guys think? Do you think that they're going, that they've worked it out, that they're going to somehow share power? Is that in the nature of someone like Steve Bannon?
Steve Bannon does come from that white nationalist school of thought. And I just want to really emphasize that, because that Breitbart story accusing Kushner of having a thin resume on diplomacy is so incredibly ironic, especially if it was written with the intent to defend Bannon and to basically, you know, insult Kushner. Bannon is a nightmare. And so if Kushner is the force within the administration that keeps the white nationalist school of thought in check, then I'm happy about it. I don't believe for a second that the infighting has stopped. I think that it will continue, because ideologically there are some differences there, and there's significant differences. And look, Kushner is an Orthodox Jew. And when you have white nationalist forces within the administration and people backing that ideology, you're gonna have the infighting. And I'm glad that it exists, because someone like Bannon, I think, is incredibly dangerous. And I hope that Kushner does have a little bit more power than he does within the administration.
I just think we're screwed. I mean, any way you look at it. I mean, the fact that these guys are arguing, it's like 2 months in, they're arguing, they haven't gotten anything right. Very little right. Then he launches these missiles, and then some people say it was right. I still don't agree with that either. So there's a lot of, there's a big mess going on, and two of his main guys are arguing. That does not induce confidence. There's a lack of experience here. No one is qualified to be in these positions until the general McMaster, was it McMaster? Those guys come in, and then they go, okay, you know what? Let's get this. He's probably looking over. He's like, what's Steve Bannon doing here?
I wouldn't blame anyone, and you know, Trump, with experience, feeling that way.
Yeah, and Trump is so triggered. Like he seems to just change alliances. He's like, oh, you're right, Bannon, get out of here. And Bannon's like, what? You know, I don't feel like there's a good guy in power, and the advisors either. Actually, I found it ironic that, I mean, it was kind of funny that he keeps saying Kushner all these like dangerous areas. He's like, maybe he doesn't like his son-in-law. No. He's like, you go to Iraq, I'm going to Mar-a-Lago. Yes. What the, you know what I'm saying? But honestly, the other problem with this, which is frustrating as hell, is when you watch someone from the White House or one of Trump's surrogates saying, no, there's no big deal, this has been the best. Trump himself, been a successful 100 days. And you're like, what reality are they watching?
Well, I think that it's in their best interest to pretend as if everything is going smoothly, right? I don't think that they're even necessarily in denial. I think that they just want to straight out lie to the American people, and hopefully some will really buy into this narrative that the media is lying to them and that everything's actually going very smoothly. But I think Americans are starting to wake up, which is a good sign. But I agree with you. I'm not trying to say like, oh, we have Kushner there and that's like the good force is fighting the bad force. No, we have one bad guy and then one guy who's worse, right? And when we're talking about the Kushner-Bannon issue, there are a lot of issues with Kushner, don't get me wrong, but at least when it comes to this white nationalist ideology, Kushner could be, and I hope is, a mitigating force.
Yeah, and we actually saw, I mean, we reported yesterday on the response to Trump launching the attacks into Syria. So how do his big supporters make ends meet in their head on that? Well, they say that it's not Donald Trump. He doesn't actually want to do that. It's the Jews in the White House that are making him do that. And so they attack Kushner, they attack Ivanka Trump. It's no coincidence that those guys also like Steve Bannon. And I agree that either way, regardless of which has Trump's ear, we are screwed. But I think we're screwed in very different ways.
Right.
I think that with Steve Bannon, we get Muslim bans and we get a much more disgusting foreign policy, I think. That's true. We also get some incompetence, because he doesn't know government any more than Jared Kushner does. With Jared Kushner, I don't think that we have that sort of ideological extremism in terms of social policy, hatred of Mexicans or gays or anything like that. But I do think we'll get far more corruption. I think that Jared Kushner is in there to get, like Breitbart says, to get sweetheart business deals for his own family, which is tied in with real estate. And I think that him combined with Donald Trump, I think that they are going to loot the federal government for their own purposes. And it's up to you to decide if that's better or worse than Muslim bans and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and listen, people say, oh, Hillary was crooked, this was crooked, like the politicians are crooked. It's human nature. These guys are going to get in there. They're all powerful people. Trump's a businessman. They're all going to be there doing a lot of stuff that's crooked, taking advantage of their opportunities for their self, for their own business purposes, or trying to implement their own ideologies. And the thing is, though, it just, again, it goes to this thing where you hear people in the election, people were saying, I want an outsider. I want an outsider. He was going to clean the swamp. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want an outsider. It's the only job in the world where people say they want an outsider. You don't hear people go, I want a surgeon who's an outsider, someone who's never done this before,
yeah,
who will surround himself with other people who've never done this before.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's really frustrating watching these guys, thinking to myself, I feel like I know more about foreign policy than these guys do.
Absolutely.
You send a 35-year-old real estate developer to Iraq to do what? What is he going to do in here?
To manage the peace process in Israel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it blows my mind. I'm not defending Steve Bannon at all. Steve Bannon is scary. Like, as an Iranian American, that guy is super scary. Mm-hmm. So, we're screwed.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And it is really scary. But I think what people were tired of during the election was like this fakeness and this inauthenticity that you see with a lot of standard politicians. They wanted someone that they could actually identify with who would at least pretend like they understood the economic issues that they're experiencing. And unfortunately, a lot of people did get conned by someone like Trump. Because look, he's the number one swamp monster. He's the type of person who's exploited a corrupt political system for his own personal gain for a very long time.
Yeah.
He has taken advantage of that system. So there was no reason to believe that he wouldn't get elected and fill that swamp up with, monsters just like him.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, people did get conned. He's still there. And when people wanted an anti-establishment politician, they unfortunately voted for the wrong one.
Yeah.
There was one anti-establishment politician, and unfortunately, he didn't even get an opportunity to run as the front runner for the Democrats.
Yeah, listen, I'm someone who's very, I'm not a hawk at all. I'm much more peaceful, and I want diplomacy. But when I see he's bringing some of these generals in, mm-hmm, I actually feel a little bit of comfort. I'm like, okay, well, these guys got some experience. Mm-hmm. Now they're probably going to push for war with somebody, but at least they kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them, the ones who are looking to jobs as lobbyists for the defense contractors, they might well push for war. But at least the soldiers know the cost of war. They know, they've seen dead soldiers. They filled the White House with these guys who, it's just been like Ayn Randian power fantasies their whole life. They don't actually know what the real world is like. I want to turn back to Steve Bannon, though, because there's a reason I don't think that this is done, and that I think Jared Kushner should watch his back. So first, I want to show this video of Joe Scarborough, who apparently has inside sources about just how angry Steve Bannon was.
Steve Bannon is an island unto himself in the White House. Any allies he may have had have scattered, and all have told the president they are with the president and they are with his family. I just think it's a matter of time. Does he decide to be Kellyanne Conway and stay in the White House with no authority and hang on? Or does he leave the White House? Well, then I talked to three of the top president's people yesterday. They do not understand what happened to Steve Bannon, why he decided to start attacking the president's family. And the word I heard from all three was he just snapped. And that's causing concern from the president down, that somebody would be this unbalanced, that somebody would be this undisciplined, that they would just snap and start attacking the president's family.
So apparently Steve Bannon snapped. And then you began seeing the Breitbart articles attacking Jared Kushner. Now, something else happened in that period at the end of last week that nobody's talking about any of this anymore, because 59 cruise missiles were launched in an airfield in Syria. But I noticed that amongst the different articles that were apparently probably being inspired by Steve Bannon to attack Jared Kushner over, there was also, all of a sudden, months after Jared Kushner had to finish his security clearance application process, all that, All of a sudden, right after Bannon is taken off the NSC, a story about Jared Kushner's security clearance hits the news. So when Kushner sought top secret security clearance, he was required to disclose all encounters with foreign government officials over the last 7 years. Kushner did not mention dozens of contacts with foreign leaders or officials in recent months, including a December meeting with the Russian ambassador and one with the head of a Russian state-owned bank. So that information could have come out months ago, but it came out right during their feud. Now, that not mentioning that you've met dozens of times with Russian officials, you can make of that whatever you want. But we know that we're in a climate right now where Mike Flynn just had to step down because of lying over his meetings with Russian officials. So that's not just a here's five things that he's not qualified to run. That's a knife in the back, an attempt to get Jared Kushner to have to step down. It didn't work, partially because the news immediately turned to Syria. This story has now been forgotten. Nobody cares about it anymore. But I believe that Steve Bannon might have been involved in that story being leaked. And that is not just like a punch in the gut. That's a knife to the throat. He was trying to take Jared Kushner out of government there.
Wow.
It didn't work, but the next one could.
Just listening to you explain that right now reminded me of The Godfather. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's a lot going on. Like Jared Kushner's kind of the Michael Corleone, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you got the and then the Turk, Salazzo, is trying to move in and sell drugs. And that's Bannon. You know what I'm saying? And Barcini's involved somehow. This is very, like, you should watch The Godfather again. It will teach you how this White House is being run.
Yeah, that may be true, but I hope that in 4 years we don't get a sequel.
I hope that it stops. But the other thing is, it's interesting because I just watched Scarsborough talk. It's interesting, he's right. Like, Flynn is gone. Kellyanne has kind of been demoted. Bannon might be gone.
If Sessions had to step down for those same sorts of things.
Nunez. It feels like Trump's White House is more like his TV show, The Apprentice. Like he just keeps firing people.
People get fired, demoted all over the place.
And at the very end, it'll just be one guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe he thinks he's on the show.
It's still going on. Maybe we're all on the show. Anyway, we do have to take our first break, though. When we come back, we've got some electoral consequences coming up for Republicans for how incredibly unpopular they've become. And then the protests that have taken over Venezuela over the last week. We'll have all that and more when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the show, everybody. John Arola, Anna Kasparian, our guest, Maz Jobani, going through the news, breaking it down. We got some tweets from you. People have been tweeting at hashtag TYT Live. D. Moore, who actually we read a tweet by him yesterday, says this administration is more of a mess than Godfather 3. I've actually seen Godfather 3.
They keep pulling me back in.
Exactly. That was
the line. You're Italian, of course you've seen it.
I lived it, okay. Billy Runaway says, quote, Bannon snapped as undisciplined. That just won't fly in Trump's rock steady White House. And I'm a Derpy Panda says, Confucius says, how does one snap when they were not together to begin with? During the rest of the first hour.
Yes.
Before we get back into it, though, I did want to let you know we alluded to a couple of live shows that Maz is going to be doing soon. So if we could put up this this graphic, Maz, April 15th, that's the Kennedy Center. That's going to be the show where you're filming the Netflix special.
Absolutely, right? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm excited about that.
I love that picture, by the way.
Yeah.
And then coming back to LA the following week, the Subban Theater, April 22nd. And tickets are still available for both?
Both, yeah, they're both getting close to being sold out, but I'm doing both of those and I'm doing other cities as well. So if people just go to MazJobrani.com, they'll see if I'm coming to their cities.
Okay. And also, just for you members, we are going to have a post game live after the show. If you're not a member now, you can become one, watch the post game live. There will not be a new episode of TYT Old School, unfortunately. It will be back next week. Cenk just isn't here this week. But you can still go to tytnetwork.com, go to member content, and we've got dozens of episodes of Old School that you can catch up on until Cenk gets back into LA. And with that, why don't we jump back into the news? Actually, being in power, being in charge of things, isn't really working out so well for the Republican popularity across the country for high-profile politicians. And that very well could have electoral consequences for the GOP. Now, we don't know yet how widespread it'll be. We need a big election for that. But we could have a preview as early as tonight. So in Kansas, they're having a special election. It's the 4th congressional district, and it pits James Thompson, the Democrat, against Ron Estes, the Republican. Now, this is a district that Trump won by 30 points. And so why are we even talking about this? Come on, that's about as big of a lead as you can have. Well, not too long ago, an internal Republican poll had Estes up by just 1 point. That is an amazing movement in not a long time, but it has been enough to get the Republicans to respond, because they don't want to lose this seat so early after Trump's inauguration. People watch these and they think that it could be a bellwether for further elections down the line. A Republican strategist in Kansas says it shouldn't be this close. Estes's closest race should have been to get through the nominating convention, and then you're skating, but right now he's not. And it's not just speculation. The National Republican Congressional Committee spent nearly $100,000 on TV and digital ads, where they hit Thompson as a fan of late term abortion, which his campaign says is just a vicious lie. They're just saying that. But these ads have led to a lot of conservatives donating to Estes's campaign. And in fact, it even goes up as high as the White House, with Donald Trump getting off his ass and doing a little bit of work to record this phone call ad for tonight's special election.
Hello, this is President Donald Trump, and I have something big to tell you. This Tuesday, April 11th, there is a very important special election for Congress in Kansas. On Tuesday, Republican Ron Estes needs your vote and needs it badly. Ron is a conservative leader who's going to work with me to make America great again. We're going to do things really great for our country. Our country needs help. Ron is going to be helping us big league. But I need Republicans like Ron Estes to help me get the job done. This is an important election. There's really few very much more important. And I need your vote for Ron Estes on Tuesday. So, April 11th, Tuesday, please join me in supporting Republican Ron Estes for Congress. He's going to help me do a really, really good job for our country. Thank you very much.
That was great. Yeah. That was the worst possible thing you can do if you're noticing that even Republicans are turning on you because of how crazy Trump and his administration is. And then you have him record an ad for you. Awesome. Keep spending money on that kind of stuff.
And you let him say big league.
It's like he hit all of the things that he gets criticized
for
in one ad.
You're going to be so proud.
Tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, but look, he's appealing to committed conservatives. That's why he referenced all of those specific policies and Estes' positions on them. Oh no, wait, he just said he'd do a good job over and over and over again. So look, he's trying to help out big league. Maybe we can help out as well. If you're watching this live, I believe the polls should still be open in that special election. So I'd never like to tell people to stop watching the show, but perhaps pause the stream, go and vote if you can. Either way, and then come back. But yeah, that's a comical ad. Trump clearly doesn't care.
He's so bad at reading that script too.
To get him to work. He just doesn't want to work. And so look, that's an incredibly important election. Now, it might not go for the Democrats. I mean, they were down by 30 points.
So it's
Kansas too. And there's redistricting and all of that is true. There's other elections coming up. Georgia has another election that people are watching really closely, and the national Democratic fundraising apparatuses are putting actually more money into that one than this, which might be have been a bad decision. It looks like this is an opportunity. But this is not just a Kansas thing. It's not just a Georgia thing. This could have national implications, because there's been some polls coming out that are showing how deeply unpopular some of these high profile Republicans are. First of all, though, they looked at the constituents of senators. Who likes their senator? Who doesn't like their senator? You want to guess who the most popular senator in the country is amongst their constituents?
Could it be the pro behind us?
Could it be? Why was he on that the whole time? Weird. Yes, 75% of Sanders' constituents approved of his performance in office, compared to 21% who disapproved, which is, by the way, actually worse numbers than he had 6 months ago, but still the best in the entire country. Now, you might think, well, look, 75% like him, but people tend to like their senator. Come on, who could you actually dislike? Well, we found someone they dislike. Only 44% of Kentuckians approve of Mitch McConnell's performance, the least liked senator in the entire country, compared to 47% who disapprove. He's the only one out of 100 to receive net disapproval, and yet he's perhaps the most powerful senator in the country. What a weird, twisted political system we have.
Right.
That you don't need to be liked to have huge power in our government.
That's right.
They don't have term limits, do they? The senators?
For the senators, no.
Yeah, so
they can just keep going.
He just stayed. McConnell, I've never liked it. He was the one who said that our job is to stop Obama from passing it, right?
That's right.
Exactly. I've never liked that guy. And Bernie, I mean, first of all, when you hear McConnell talk, I feel like if they were at a party, like Bernie feels like they're both older white guys.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? Bernie feels like the kind of guy who might have weed or, you know, but wouldn't mind if you had weed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And McConnell feels like the kind of guy who's like sitting there, like in a polo with like a little sweater around and
right.
just thinking racist thoughts.
He'd be the narc. Like he'd if, be he, the narc. If he Buzz saw you Killington. Smoking a doobie, he'd like go tell the cops.
Yeah, he'd tell the cops.
He's that kind of guy.
He would. You know, he'd yeah. be hesitant when he sees the brownish color skin tone. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know if they can even see. He's actually peeking on the corner of that graphic.
There he is.
Over there. You can't even see him.
You guys can't see him.
And look, it's really unfortunate because he's unpopular, but he does keep getting reelected, and there are no term limits. And unfortunately, some species of sea turtle can live to 200 or 300 years
old. I know,
old.
It's
and so
amazing.
He might be around for a really long time.
That's now, the reason why it's so incredibly important for people to get involved in midterm elections and actually yes. pay attention to what's happening on a very local level, right? It's not just about who's running for president. You know, midterm elections are incredibly important, and I'm really curious to see how it all plays out, you know, in the upcoming midterm election.
It's gonna be rough. I've looked ahead. It's gonna be rough, even if they're unpopular. I mean, there can be big moves, but it's not as favorable a year as this last one.
But it's also interesting that they do that thing that they did to the race in Kansas. They say, they just throw out something where they go, this guy supports late term abortions.
Yeah,
and that's Trump did that. In the debate with Hillary, he's like, she would just pull a baby out at the 9th month, and she's like, no, I wouldn't. But then his supporters are like, yes, he would.
I can see her. She busts into the operating room, just drags it out of there.
But that's what's crazy. You can say anything, and it could be totally aligned. People will vote for you.
But that doesn't mean that people can't learn. They can eventually develop the appropriate hatred and disrespect for politicians. So we're also going to tell you the least popular governor. Any guesses? Least popular governor?
No idea.
Well, 71% of New Jersey disapproves of Chris Christie, while just 25% approve.
Oh, that is pretty
those numbers incredible. Are rough. Christie actually edged out Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, who I would have guessed, who had 66% disapproval to 27% approval.
Nobody likes anyone in Kansas.
Not so much. It's rough times because of Sam Brownback. But Christie, after all the deference he gave to Donald Trump and the sucking up he did, it has not done him any favors.
No, I think that it worked against him. He made a fool out of himself. You know, when he essentially flip-flopped and decided to support Trump, you know, that incredibly embarrassing video of him creepily, you know, nodding behind Trump that we made fun of so much during the election. So none of this surprises me. Again, I think that the midterm elections are important. Hopefully people are paying attention and they actually get involved and cast their vote for the person that really looks out for their best interests.
And hopefully they're watching these special elections too and not just waiting for this.
Yeah, people want, you know, especially like in Jersey, they're tough guys, a lot of tough guys, you know, and then your governor goes, remember the meatloaf situation where Trump ordered for Christie? Oh. He's like, you're going to have the meatloaf. He's like, all right.
No
more Oreos.
So good.
Right there, I would have been like, oh, he's got no balls.
Yeah.
You know, forget it.
Yeah. Okay, let's switch it up. Pretty casterized southward. We're almost a week into fiercely renewed protests against the government of Venezuela. There have been thousands that have organized in the capital city, but it goes beyond the capital city. It's across the country. I mean, the protests have never really gone away. For well over a year, they've been going on, but they've come back in a big way, and there's some great reasons for that. Unfortunately, police tactics against the protesters started off brutal and became worse as time went on. And we're going to give you the details. But you should understand, we're going to be showing you pictures throughout. Some of the photos are inspiring, the big crowds, but then the sheer amount of tear gas that they're sending into these crowds, the military tactics on display there, fires in the background.
It's amazing.
Some of these photos were made. I mean, thank God for photojournalists that are willing to, as with the protesters, put themselves in dangerous situations. You see grenade launchers being shot off, shotguns firing beanbags at protesters. Now, we've got some quotes from some of the opposition leaders in Venezuela who are fighting this ongoing political battle against Nicolas Maduro. Freddy Guevara, the opposition majority Congress deputy speaker, said, "This is a battle of resistance. We will see who gets tired first, us of fighting or them of repressing." And that is a rough battle to wage because I don't know at this point. And also the opposition lawmaker for one of the opposition parties said, "We went into the streets to protest measures taken by the government against our own constitution and our own democracy. But this time repression was worse than before, and as we showed you, riot police firing tear gas, There was actually a tear gas canister, a video shown in an active tear gas canister in a hospital. Patients who are about to undergo surgery having to be taken out. One infant had to be treated for asphyxiation. So these non-lethal tactics can have lethal consequences. And in fact, they already have. One protester was killed on Thursday of last week. Dozens have been wounded. I've read over 100 wounded. Nearly 200 people have already been arrested, many of them students. But let's talk briefly about why we've come to this point. So we've been talking about Venezuela for a long time here. Food shortages. One report said that the average Venezuelan had lost 18 pounds as a result of the lack of food. Because there's heavy price controls, the food isn't being produced, there's electricity shortages. But then there's also the actions taken by those at the top. So Maduro and also the Supreme Court. So in a couple of decisions, they basically took away all the power from the popularly elected legislature. Mm-hmm. There was a huge outcry over that, and they sort of stepped back, but they did it. And that is scary for a country that's supposed to be a democracy, to see them step this far in the direction of an authoritarian or dictatorial form of government. You also have crackdowns on opposition leaders. So Leopoldo Lopez has been in jail for more than 3 years already. It's one of the most popular opposition politicians there. Still in jail, and recently Henrique Capriles was barred from running for office for 15 years. That's the governor of one of the most populous, I believe the most populous region in Venezuela. So at the same time that the legislature is being cracked down on, you now have those who could, I mean, Henrique came within, I believe, a couple of points of ousting Maduro in the last national election.
Yep.
So now they're being barred from running. At the same time, the people are suffering. Yes. Money's being pumped into the military. He's armed effectively his own militias outside of the military, a security apparatus that he's armed himself. It's a scary situation.
It is, it is. And so at first, and this is prior to, you know, the more dictatorial moves under Maduro, I actually felt a little bit of sympathy for Maduro because he was elected into office after Hugo Chavez. And keep in mind that Chavez is the person who kind of crafted the beginning of an economic situation that was destined for failure. Now, there were a lot of different factors into why Venezuela's economic situation became so dire. It kind of started off with an over-reliance on oil and also an over-reliance on imports as opposed to, you know, industry exporting goods to other countries. And so you have this one, you know, industry that you rely on for all the money, and then oil prices go down, and then what happens? And then also keep in mind that even though I think that social programs to help the poor are incredibly important, I favor them tremendously, okay? I do want to add that, you know, there is a way of going too far. So you have countries like Saudi Arabia, for instance, that also rely heavily on oil, but they also save money in case oil prices go down. Venezuela, unfortunately, did not do that.
Yeah.
And so since they were spending so much money on social programs and helping the poor and not really saving enough for when oil prices go down, then all of a sudden the economic situation just kind of explodes. So it kind of started off like that, and I felt a little bit of sympathy for Maduro simply because he was the one who inherited, you know, this economic system that again was destined to fail. But then he decided to dig himself into a deeper hole, and then he refused to let go of power, and that's what we're seeing here.
To make necessary reforms as well that could have avoided some of this.
Exactly. He did not make the necessary reforms, kept digging that hole deeper and deeper. People are hungry, people are desperate. You see this uprising, and then he continues to dig that hole even further. And so what he's doing here and what those in power are doing in regard to barring people from running because they know that that individual is more likely to win in upcoming elections is disgusting and devastating. And then add the fact that right now Maduro is in Cuba. Right, yeah. And he's meeting with, sorry if I'm stepping on your toes, I don't know if you were gonna mention this part. But he's meeting with essentially the Latin American version of NAFTA. It's known as ALBA, and it's like a socialist, social democratic organization. It's like an alliance of various countries. Cuba is one of them. Cuba and Venezuela created this alliance to begin with back in 2004. It does not send a good message to your people when you meet with Fidel Castro. It just doesn't. It's a bad idea right now. Mm-hmm. And right now, a lot of the protesters see it as a vacation. And for those who know what he's actually there for, which is probably some economic help, it still doesn't look good because what's Cuba going to do for you right now? You know what I'm saying?
Meeting with the brother, not Fidel.
I'm so sorry. Raul Castro.
That would have been horrible if it was me with Fidel Castro.
I misspoke. Raul Castro. I apologize.
Look, when things get rough, a seance might be your only option.
Well, let me say something. I got to thank you, and I got to thank you, and I got to thank the Young Turks, because I'm learning a lot. Because in all honesty, I didn't even know this was happening because I've been watching American
news. U.S. media hasn't really been covering
it. U.S. media, all I knew that happened was Homeland season 7 or whatever this just ended. I know that Caitlyn Jenner got in trouble for the Pepsi commercial. And
it was Kendall.
Kendall, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Why they got to drag Caitlyn into this mess?
Kendall. But it's amazing because what's interesting is, as an Iranian American watching what you guys just showed me, it reminds me a lot of 2009 when there was the protests in Iran after the elections. And the other thing that this makes me think about is it's unfortunate that we don't learn more about the history of the world, because I honestly don't know what you just said right now about Maduro. I agree with you. Like, I would think to myself, oh, he's a leftist. I tend to lean for the leftist because they're thinking about the people. But then you're right, they're grabbing for power. So leftist doesn't always equal a good thing.
It doesn't.
And I was just reading about John Leguizamo, who's doing a show, I guess a new show, where he talks about Latino history in America. And he goes, I never learned that in America. And we don't learn these things in America.
Yeah. Because we're very self-absorbed as a country. Yeah. And so right now, if you watch the media, and you know, we try to be cognizant of this as well, because I think sometimes we unfortunately fall into this pattern. We focus way too much on domestic policy or, you know, US foreign policy, as opposed to all these other countries that are dealing with unrest, that are dealing with, you know, this rise of dictators and essentially a power grab. And that's what we're seeing in Venezuela right now.
But you can also learn, I'm sorry, one last thing. You can also learn a lot from these things, because as you're speaking about this, I'm reminded a little bit about some of the things that are going on here. As Trump criticizes the press and tries to delegitimize the press, calling them fake news, as he just puts out executive orders, slowly but surely we feel like, oh, you could start creeping in that direction. And before you know it, he could say, well, this guy's not allowed to run and this guy's not allowed to run. And then we could, you know what I'm saying? That's an extreme example. But it is a warning to what we have.
You need to learn about what's happening in other countries just so you don't repeat the same mistakes. And by the way, I just want to clarify one quick thing. The reason why I think it's a little problematic for Maduro to meet with Raul Castro right now is because you have a situation in Cuba where anyone who disagrees with the government, if there's any dissent, they get shut down immediately. There's, you know, some serious ramifications to that. And Maduro is following suit. He's using the same type of tactics in his own country. And so that doesn't send a good message to your people.
Exactly, and that's the thing. I mean, look, we want to see this sort of activism, both in the US where it's necessary, but also you're seeing it here. And with much more threat of violence. People have already died. People are being locked up. At any time, the death toll could rise. I mean, if the police are given an order, the situation spirals out of control. I mean, they're facing really harsh circumstances. And it's not the first time. I mean, we covered a couple of years ago, the student protests in South America as well. There's a history of this sort of activism at the risk of your own life to try to change things, and things desperately need to change there. So we're gonna keep an eye on the situation. We do unfortunately have to take our second break though. When we come back, we've got one more story for you. Let us know what you think about the topics we've covered already. Hashtag TYT Live, we'll be back in just a few. Welcome back to the first hour of the Young Turks, everybody. John and Anna and Maz. We've got one more story we want to get to before the close of the first hour, so I'm going to jump right into it. Thanks to a law that Donald Trump signed earlier this year, Planned Parenthood's funding is now in serious jeopardy across the country. But some states are not taking it lying down. And Maryland just passed a law that would actually refund Planned Parenthood if Congress defunded it. The new protection measure would preserve access to preventive care services for 25,000 people in the state. $2 million from Maryland's Medicaid budget and $700,000 from its general fund will be directed toward the services that Planned Parenthood provides. Which, again, I just want to repeat this in case any Republican lawmakers are watching this. For many people, men and women, that's the only clinic you can go to. It's not just an abortion factory. It is the source of healthcare for a lot of people, and they are eagerly going to try to take it away. Now, the reason I want to talk about this is not just that it's great that Planned Parenthood, which is, by the way, apparently the most popular political organization in the country, I just saw a recent poll, is being protected. That's great. But the damage that Donald Trump and Republicans can do across the country is not something that we simply have to accept. You can get involved in your local and state governments, and you can pass measures like this to try to stop that damage, to ward off as much of it as possible until we get sane national governance again. And it goes beyond just Planned Parenthood. So lawmakers in Nevada are trying to pass bills that enable women to access 12-month birth control supplies. And New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced in January that he would expand reproductive rights protections for New Yorkers, requiring health insurers to cover medically necessary abortions and most forms of birth control. But even wider than that, in California, some bills are being considered. I think one was already passed, that if some climate change laws were passed nationally, we would be able to retain our more stringent requirements in terms of fuel efficiency standards and things like that. And I know, Anna, in the second hour, you're going to be talking about the expansion of tuition-free college.
Right.
And so all this action is happening on the state level, and I think that that is a great sign considering how big of a threat we face from Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. I think that it's important to keep in mind that your local politicians are more likely to represent you and your best interests if you are involved and politically active in your state or your municipality, right? So these are things that you should pay very close attention to. I think that one of the biggest failures of, you know, the electorate and the media is that we focus way too much on politics on a federal level. And look, we cover a lot of national news here, but again, pay close attention to what's happening on a local level because it's incredibly important for you to know who the incumbent, you know, politician is. Oftentimes the incumbent just gets reelected over and over again. Sometimes they don't even get challenged. Mm-hmm. So just educate yourself on those issues because these are the people who will look out for you and your best interests. I know in California, there have been a number of actions taken to kind of mitigate the negative impact of Trump's administration. We want to continue fighting for, you know, the environment. We want to continue fighting for undocumented immigrants. We want to continue doing what makes California such a great state. And yeah. I hope that you guys are aware of what's happening in your states and you're politically active.
Yeah, this reminds me a little bit. First of all, I think it's great that Maryland's doing this. This reminds me a little bit of how when Trump cut the, I think the EPA by like $2 billion or something.
Right.
And then donated $75,000 of his own money and made a big deal out of it. I was like, really, jackass? Really? You're going to do the $2 billion cut and here's $75,000?
Let's call it even. Yeah, exactly. And so look, you should definitely pay attention to the elections. And state level elections are happening all the time because we have a weird system in America where we never stop having elections. And look into who your state representatives are. State legislatures are incredibly important. Who's running to be governor, for instance. But you don't have to just vote for politicians. You can also run at the state or local level. You could get involved directly in politics. And there are organizations, some longstanding, some that have been set up recently, like Bernie Sanders' efforts to try to draft people to run. There's Justice Democrats as well. You can get involved, not just through like proxy politicians voting for them, but actually running and championing laws that are going to be forgotten or that there's not going to be progress on for the next 4 years. There's no reason that, just like with Maryland, we don't have to lay down and take it from DC. We can stop the damage from being done. And I'm glad that there are state level politicians who are not just going to be doing this, but are already doing it. And we're going to spotlight as many laws as we can that are passed that are positive, but we're inevitably going to miss some. But understand that fight is being waged at the state level, and it's important that is happening. Anyway, want to thank you guys for joining me in the first hour. Maz, always great to have you back on the show. We should make it more than once a year.
I would love to come back more than once a year, yeah.
But you're going to be busy in the near future. You want to tell us about the shows you have coming up?
Absolutely. I got this Saturday, April 15th, I'm taping my new Netflix special at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. And then Saturday, April 22nd, I'm going to be at the Saban Theater doing another big show where I'll be running over an hour. I have 4 or 5 comedians opening for me. And then after that, I'll be in San Francisco, New York. I'm going to Montreal for the Comedy Festival this summer. So all the tickets, MazYourBunny.com. I got a lot of Trump material and then a lot of material about being a dad. So come on out.
You have any idea when that's going to be released on Netflix, the new special?
We don't have an exact date yet, but we're hoping sometime mid to late summer.
Okay, awesome. Oh, yeah. They can really turn that around fast. Louis C.K.'s, they released it, I think, less than a month after they taped it.
Yeah, he taped it pretty fast.
Netflix and, is agile.
Yeah.
So, Anna, you're going to be doing the second hour with Hasan and Grace. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Uh-huh.
So you're going to be coughing through the second hour with Hasan and Grace. What can we expect in the second hour?
All right. So I'm sure many of you have heard of Sean Spicer's gaffes related to the Holocaust today. So we will be talking about that. And we will also discuss New York and free tuition. There are some caveats to that story, and I want to make sure that our audience knows what those caveats are. Lots of really great stories, so you want to stick around and watch them.
So we're going to take our little break right now. Continue tweeting us at hashtag TYT Live, and we'll be back before you know it.